This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is Geek Squawks. My name is Jeff Sandu, together with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. We should talk about social media, especially for a new type of social media that may, be popular by the year end of 2020. Because recently on Valentine's Day, Joshua Kushner, and if that name sounds familiar, it is because he is the brother of Jared Kushner, which is the senior advisor and the son-in-law to President Donald Trump. Joshua Kushner announced the release of an app called Bedford via his Instagram and Twitter pages, complete with the iHeart emoji. So he's getting in with the times, trying to attract the youth. The post read, "For some time, I've been thinking about what it would be like to have a space on my phone for just Carly and myself." And of course, he's referring to his wife, supermodel Carly Kloss. The post describes how Kushner spent the last few months creating a private messaging app designed to let you interact via text, video, and photo with the single most important person in your life, which is your partner, or maybe your friend, or maybe your parent, or a grandparent.
Or my cat.
Or King Jafar, in that sense. Yeah. Your cat.
Although he does have problems using a smartphone.
Yeah, we've not gone to that stage yet, but I'm sure by the end of maybe 2020.
Well, no, it's the touch screens, his paws.
Oh, the
don't.
Paws,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
He needs a smart paws, not.
Oh, yeah, I'll have to get in one of those electric socks.
Yeah. Now, so Bedford isn't the only new app that is designed to change our relationship with social media by creating this safe and intimate space for just a select few. November last year actually saw a debut of Cocoon, which is a network that was founded by two former employees of Facebook that connects up to about 12 family members. And then earlier this month, the former founders of anonymous app Secret, they launched Icaria, which is an app that is built for close relationships. Another one, which is called True, it's a private messaging app that's restricted to small groups. So, you know, a lot of people are taking this idea of, like, you know, social media has just been tarnished, that name social media as well has been tarnished. And, you know, if it's out there on social media, millions of people will see it. But now I think, you know, in 2020, a lot of people are trying to reinvent, or at least, you know, a lot of these former employees of these big social media giants are coming out and deciding to change the way we perceive the term social media with this intimate apps.
Well, yeah. And it was actually when you sent me the link for this story that I realized I'd been paying for that Wikipedia social media thing, like $13 a month. And I never went to it after that first day. I've been paying for it for the last 4 months. So I need to decide what to do with that. But I don't know what to think about this, really. The idea of a social network just for a couple of people, isn't that something that, you know, do you need a network for that? Is that not something that you can do with text messaging or WhatsApp or the things that you already have? Do you need that additional layer?
But I think maybe, you know, what social media has is just that news feed of stuff instead of, you know, me sending it to you or having a WhatsApp group. You know, it's just more of like, I don't know. You're right in some degrees.
Yeah,
it is a WhatsApp group.
If you are Joshua Kushner and, you know, your partner is
supermodel. Each other?
Well, no, I mean, you might have exceptional lives that you might want to share, but my feed with my wife is going to be, whose turn is it to get the cat litter? You know, I went to this store to get the cat litter. Can you go to that store because they've run out? It's not going to be particularly interesting, I think, for most of us because our lives are quite mundane. Mm. You know, what would we, when you look at somebody's Instagram feed, generally you see that kind of curated version of their life, which is why I still follow a friend of mine who's a guy I went to school with who's an electrical engineer. There's not many people following his Instagram, but he just takes really bad pictures of the wiring jobs that he does because he's not bothering to curate it. He's like, I fixed this wiring today, and it's just literally a picture of some wires underneath a floor. You know, that's a nice antidote to what people do with this kind of curation on social media. But I don't know necessarily what we would do with a kind of peer-to-peer social network. I mean, one of the examples they use is a network called Path, which was quite popular about 10 years ago.
I used it for a while, though, and it was pretty handy because it really kind of championed. This was like, you know, pre-Instagram or like just slightly before Instagram became hugely popular. So they had like interesting features for photography. So if you were like, you know, a fan of photography, or if you were a photographer, you would use Path because it was a way for you to upload higher resolution photos with, you know, better filters and you know,
and I really liked Path. It was, for the duration of its life, my primary social media feed, and a lot of my friends were on it as well. And you could control who saw your posts and who was in your network and all that kind of thing. So it was quite nice. It was at the time when Twitter was really starting to expand, and it wasn't really possible to have conversations on Twitter anymore because there was just too much noise. So it was a nice kind of antidote to that. But going smaller than those kind of groups of
especially
20
one-on-one.
Or 50, one-on-one, I really don't see that. I mean, it reminds me of I think there was a feature built into one of the operating systems a few years ago, and it was this idea of a heart, right? So you could peer-to-peer with your partner, and you could touch the heart on the screen, and their phone would vibrate, and that was supposed to be some virtual cuddle. Now, obviously, that was complete and utter nonsense. And I have a feeling that this idea of a social network for two is kind of that same superfluous. You know, why are you going to open an app just for that? You're going to send a text message. You're going to send a WhatsApp. It's just easier.
Actually, there are a few instant messaging platforms that's only catered to where you can only add one other person into that conversation. And, you know, it's like for you to, with your partner or with your grandparents or friends. Mostly people use it for partner because it's trying to promote, a relationship, right? So you can share, like, you know, albums. You can do to-do lists. Arrange for, holidays, so like you can do like, you know, tick boxes that you want to achieve and stuff. So there are plenty of those apps that was designed like years ago. I remember testing them out because I think we spoke about this before many years ago. Yeah. But now it seems to make a comeback, and it's the objective now is trying to change the way we have this perception of social media companies.
Yeah, I really don't think it's going in the direction that our behavior is going. Yeah. I mean, again, one of the examples they give is for parents to be in this kind of social media conversation with their children. Now, the last people children want to have a social media conversation with is their parents. So, as soon as I said that, you started laughing. Yeah. But that's the thing, right? You're trying to shoehorn people's behavior into these buckets that you've created because these buckets work for your company. Or this app or this company that you've conceived, it doesn't necessarily follow the way people's behavior is. I mean, we've seen apps like Snapchat kind of losing some of the support from their customer base because they've become overly complicated, they've become quite difficult to use, and just because that generation is moving away from that kind of open borders sharing and into these kind of tap down networks.
You know, if we still had, like, you know, the king of culture down in the dumps, this idea would be down in the dumps. Anyways, when we come back, we have king of culture and more stories after this. BFM 89.9.
Bring forth money. BFM 89.9.
And we're back. It is Geek Squawks. My name is Jess Andrew, together with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. What do we have for king of culture?
Well, I have been losing myself down the YouTube rabbit holes recently, but I've come across these really kind of cool videos that are starting to debunk a lot of the flat Earth myths that are floating around on these kind of video platforms. So one of the guys I've been following is a guy called Cyman Dan. Most Fridays he puts out what he calls his Flat Earth Friday videos, where he looks at some of the kind of prominent flat earthers and the clips they put up, and he debunks them very kind of quickly and straightforwardly. The clips, they're generally very, very funny. He really just rips apart the the views that are coming from these guys. Where they get their science knowledge from is, you know, absolutely no idea. One guy called Chris from New York, who likes to do his videos in his car, he posted an absolutely lovely one where he's coming up with his theory and his wife walks into the kitchen where he's videoing and tells him to stop all this nonsense. It's just wasting time and she's got things to do in the kitchen. So that's his wife and she's got no time for it. So he goes through a lot of the theories and he explains it in quite straightforward terms. He's a science teacher by trade. I think he runs a tutoring company. So yeah, if you if you're getting annoyed by all of this kind of anti-science stuff, go onto YouTube and actually look for the people who are promoting the science. So yeah, there are lots of people like Simon Dan. He's just a favorite of mine. But yeah, just have a look at some of these videos. And also it's as well as being entertaining, it's very kind of educational for me as well, because, you know, I don't necessarily know all of the stuff about density and mass, and my knowledge of the periodic table is probably slightly less than a seven-year-old's. So it's just a good way to catch up on that kind of knowledge as well.
All right, what's it called again?
So yeah, just go and look for any of the kind of flat earth debunkers, but the one I like is Simon Dan.
All right. Now, are you a fan of durian, Matt?
I'm one of the...
Because you've been here for a long time.
Yeah, I actually like the smell because I'm really weird.
Okay.
But I'm kind of allergic to it, so it brings me out in a skin rash if I eat it.
Didn't expect it to go that way, to be honest
with you. Yeah, most people are the other way around. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, why I'm asking is because apparently the waste parts of the world's smelliest fruit can be actually recycled into energy storage devices to rapidly charge electric vehicles and gadgets.
I have to interject here to say this is possibly my favorite science story ever.
And this was actually forwarded to me late night by Malik Ali, the founder of BFM. He, like, I think past midnight, he sent me this WhatsApp message and like, Jeff, you have to, you know, talk about this and perhaps probably even get Vincent Gomez on the show. And now Vincent Gomez is from the University of Sydney, and his colleagues used leftovers from the durians and jackfruits, which is the world's biggest tree fruit, to make super light hollow materials called aerogels. Now, these aerogels, they make for super efficient components parts for energy storing devices called supercapacitors. Now, supercapacitors, they work differently to the conventional batteries, so they can't store as much energy, but they can actually charge much faster. They can be used to store the energy harvested from braking systems in electric vehicles, which is very common, and you see in today's cars, which can then be transferred to the battery or used to provide short bursts of power for quick acceleration. For example, when you want to overtake, and jump onto the fast lane to, you know, get past a lorry or a truck and so on and so forth. Just have, you know, a couple of durians in the boot you're good to go.
I'm imagining people carrying durians around instead of a power bank and just like plugging their phone into the spiky fruit.
Yeah, this is absolutely brilliant. It's an article from The New Scientist. Now, durian, as we all know, you know, it has this really kind of, you know, pungent smell. It's a love-hate relationship. I love eating durians, but not too many, of course. But I know a lot of people, Malaysians, who absolutely hate, you know, durians. And jackfruit, which is, you know, has this same kind of stringy texture, and it makes as a very popular substitute for a vegan substitute for pulled pork, apparently.
Yeah. We eat jackfruit at home. My wife is kind of vegetarian, bordering on vegan, so she's really into jackfruit.
So apparently, these two fruits, they, to make them suitable materials for supercapacitors, Vincent Gomez and his team heated up the fruit's spongy and indelible cores with steam and then freeze-dried them, and the cores were put into a furnace to make them into highly porous ultralight aerogels, which then is used to make electrodes.
Yeah, but you see,
the
part of this story that's missing is it's fantastic that it can do that, but why did they think it might be able to do that? What are the steps that led them to steam the durian, freeze dry it, and use it as a supercapacitor.
It's not what you would normally do with a durian.
No, and but you know, we often talk about these kind of supposedly silly things that scientists seem to be doing, but you do sometimes get breakthroughs from these things that look a bit ridiculous. You know, if you saw scientists playing with durian in a lab, you'd just be like, what is our grant money going on? But no, they're actually building a really efficient supercapacitor. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Vincent, if for whatever reason that he's listening to the show, just let you know that I'm actually going to be reaching out to you because I want to know that process. How did you actually stumble across, like, this is the process to make this, you know, fast charging supercapacitor. So we'll be in touch very soon.
The first power that smells.
I'm a big fan of like museums. And when I was in the US last year, I kind of visited the many Smithsonian museums that, you know, was in Washington, D.C. I stumbled across this really good article that gives good news for those who haven't really experienced it, but, you know, love to watch or to see images or to view images. So the Smithsonian has actually released more than 2.8 million images that you can now use for free. And these include from all of the 19 Smithsonian museums, 9 research centers, libraries, archives, and also the National Zoo.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge fan of image libraries. It might not look it, but I put quite a lot of effort into finding the images that go along with these shows for the podcast. It's fantastic to have all of that kind of history at your fingertips because, you know, you're not just talking about the kind of royalty-free stock images that you get on a lot of sites. You're looking at documents that kind of show the progress of humanity and history over the last kind of 150 years that we've had photography as an art form.
Yeah. So go and check it out. Really cool stuff. You could probably spend the entire weekend just going through 2.8 million images. What do we have for Geek Tunes, Matt?
Well, in keeping with the MSP episode today and, of course, Food in Space, we have Weezer singing their classic Pork and Beans.
BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.